Genergia, interviews,
documenting her story,
views from periphery,
deconstructing the center,
fight like a girl.
Guten Abend, dobro večer. My name is Zoe Gudović and you listen to Genergia on Radio Orange. And I'm really, really happy that tonight, we will talk about feminism, what the fuck. And of course, the best guest to present the request of the question is my guest tonight, Katarina Muckstein. Ah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And is an Austrian director, a screenwriter, and producer. She studied philosophy, gender studies, and directing at Film Academy Wien. And now you will really help me because to not fuck up with the name, maybe Universität für
Musik und Darstellende Kunst.
Yes. In 2010, Katarina co-founded the production company La Banda Film, and her first feature film was Thalia from 2013. I pronounce okay?
Yes. Yeah.
And the second one, L'Animal from 2018, which was invited to the Berlinale. And she also wrote and directed the documentary Feminist What the Fuck, 2023, and most watched Austrian documentary of 2023, for which she won the Women's Prize of the City of Vienna for Best Director in 2023. Applause! Katarina, you also do so many stuff. You're co-founder of Gloria Women Networking Film, but you will talk more about this experience. For me, it's also tonight important to talk about the gender quota in Austrian Federal Film Fund that you start, that actually bring you a lot of different kind of reactions, probably mostly from the part of the male collective threatens, insults, and so many stuff. But I, from the part of the somebody who fight for the women rights, wanna say thanks and congratulations for all of this. But first of all, I really wanna ask you, how are you?
Well, thank you for the invitation to be here. And since you sent me the questions before, I thought the question, how are you, is really hard to answer. Because I feel like I'm a lot of things at the same time, most of the time. So I'm happy to be here and get away from my desk because I've been writing for the last weeks and I always feel desperate and lonely when I have to write and I feel like failing all the time. It's terrible. I guess everybody who writes professionally knows what I'm talking about. So happy to be here, but at the same time, I feel like politically exhausted from everything that has been happening in the last years and is still happening and how I fear for a lot of people that I love and who are more and more vulnerable in this world. And I just wonder, you know, what is happening most of the time. So that is also a part of what I feel all the time. And I always feel angry like I want to set something on fire, but also in a way that I would just like to cuddle up in my bed and be safe and lazy at the same time. So all of these things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm super, to be honest. I'm back from the big journey and I'm alive. The moment when I find myself with my friend Eva in the middle of the flood, till here, till the neck.
Wow.
I figure out that we not appreciate the moment now. And for me, I learned a lesson sometimes that theoretically solidarity is beautiful, but I practically see solidarity from people in Thailand to help you. They don't know how they will survive, but they help you to come to the final destination. So for me, this is practical solidarity that I miss. So I'm good, but lot of like you, lot of thoughts and lot of moments till the end of 2024. And I really think, you know, like this process of learning, it's constantly process. But I learn a lot from you because I also listen to the music that you send and you are the DJ for tonight. And please, this song that we was listening beginning of the Genergia show, is have a süß. This is the maximum that I understand.
Süß lächelnd.
Yes, but what and why you choose this song?
So this is a song by Bipolar Feminine. I think they're just great. Actually, my friend Denise Bourbon took me to see them some time ago when they were not so famous, and I was just blown away. And I just love this song, and I listen to it a lot of times when I need to hype myself up, because it kind of connects me to my 13-year-old self, like all of the, you know, like anger, but in a good mood at the same time, and like a kind of anger that gives you so much energy. So, yeah, I just love the song.
Okay. And you mentioned Denise Bourbon. She was also in Ingenergia, but, you know, like my first arriving to Vienna 3 years ago was that first moment I come 1st of October, and in 4 of October, Denise called me to be on your setting.
Oh, really?
So my arrival to Vienna, it's through the lens of your shooting and to the queer community that I met there. And in that moment, I was thinking I'm in the right place. But you are behind the camera, probably you don't see me because it's a lot of us, but it's there.
This is actually giving me goosebumps. I didn't know, you never told me, and I'm really happy to hear that.
Yes, and you somehow opened me welcoming to Vienna that I now am so in love. So my question mostly comes to the guests, you know, who ask who are migrants, how they pass migration and everything like this. But you are from Austria and from Vienna. What do you like in Vienna and about Vienna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't have much of a migration path. I grew up outside of Vienna, and I spent my teenage years, you know, in the city. And I was in the punk and hardcore scene growing up. So, yeah, it was really important for me to, you know, get away from my town and go to Vienna. And also I had my big sister living in Vienna, 13 years older than me, and she was very left-wing, very radical, and so I always had a place to stay with her. So that was the good thing about Vienna, but also growing up, I never wanted to stay in Vienna. I thought it was very provincial, and I really wanted to be somewhere else. And I went to Germany right after school. I lived in Hamburg and lived and worked my first film jobs there. But then I think at some point I figured out that I needed to have closed what I hate. Yeah. So really, I mean, you know, the things I hate, so like Catholicism and nationalism, racism. So all of this traditionalism was something that I confronted a lot when I was a teenager, and it might be like the core of my politics. And I never understood how people wanted to go to Berlin in the early 2000s. And then I went to Berlin and I saw everybody drinking their cafe latte and talking about their next project. And I felt like, you know, where's real life happening here? And the things that you have to look at to really understand what society is about and what you hate, because that's what fuels your politics, right? Mm. Yeah, so at some point I settled in Vienna.
Yes, and this is great. And you mentioned, you know, like rebel past, but you are still rebel. But I want to, like, I read your biography and that you have interest in feminism and queer philosophy since adolescence and studied gender before going to the film school. Why did that field interest in you?
Well, I think you know, the path of being politicized really starts when I was a child.
Okay.
So I had my older sister that I already mentioned, and she lived with us until I was six. And I just loved her punk music and her friends, her weird friends, and how she was so outspoken about every kind of injustice that she saw. Also, we had Nazi grandparents still, and I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with them, but I knew that my sister was always, you know, fighting this part of our family history, and she was always bringing it up and kind of causing unrest with it. And I really admired that. And also my mother, who was rather young when she had me, she was 23 and she was studying psychology, and she was just starting her path of emancipation when she had me. And she turned out to, you know, live a really feminist life and like feminist practice. And also, I guess, in her education as a therapist, there was a lot of her spirit that, you know, I got to experience, was about how the political and the personal are always intertwined, and the way you feel about things, and the possibilities that you can see really have a big influence on how you act towards others and how you act towards society. And I guess she was very big on morals also. So I remember having these conversations with her when I was in kindergarten. And, you know, I really have I have a bully gene. So I'm very dominant. And I remember, you know, this feeling as a child when you get to experience power and it feels so good. And you're kind of high on power. And then there was always my mom who stopped me and would say something like, if you have power, you have to use it for others, you know? So, I guess that's where it starts. And then, yeah, of course, you know, being in this like politicized youth culture, that was just probably the natural way for me to go. And I wanted to make films when I was maybe 16 or 17, but I was rejected from film school right after school. And so I decided on philosophy and gender studies. It was really new, you know, gender studies in academia. It was very new and very exciting. And there were so many smart people that I got to learn from. I was really a baby there. And I never finished it, of course, because then I went to film school when I was 22 and didn't finish that either. So, yeah, I'm good at quitting things when I've had enough.
But this is also part of the punk.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is the part of decision that, you know, like, what is the construct? You deconstruct all of this, you know, like, I would like to be also hear something that you prepare us, like DJ, and you can choose what you will like to will listen now. Like, what the next song? Are you ready to go, maybe? Or you want something else?
What are the songs?
You have Arthur and you have L'Animal.
Yeah, they are so soft. I will take them for the end.
Okay.
So let's go for the Italian song and I will explain what it is afterwards.
Quando?
Yes.
Ah? Okay, and you will explain?
Quando che muore un prete.
Okay.
Quando che muore un prete suonano le campane, piangono le puttane, che è morto un avventor. Quando che muore un papa, suonano il miserere, ma io c'ho un gran piacere, che è morto il puttanier. Quando che muoio io, non voglio Gesù Cristi, ma la bandiera rossa dei veri socialisti.
We back. Of course, we start conversation and actually I ask Kat the question, does she think that feminism like a little bit suppress this angriness and bully and that we, like women, need to be much more so. So you answer that give us moralistic side.
Yeah, it's true.
Because moralistic side, you know, put us that we think about really others and all these kind of political backgrounds that we belong. Okay, what? Why it's important this song for you?
Yes, I love this song.
Me too.
So it's from an album called Canti Satirici Anticlericali. So it's satirical songs, anti-clerical satirical songs. And I actually prepared a translation to English because I just love the lyrics. And the lyrics are, when a priest dies, they ring the church bells and the whores cry. The whores, because one of their johns, so one of the men who paid them for sex, has died. And when a pope dies, they pray for mercy, but I have great pleasure, because a pimp has died. And when I will die, I don't want Jesus Christ, just the red flag of the true socialists. Yeah, and I heard this song for the first time a long time ago, and it just gave me goosebumps because I thought it was funny and, you know, edgy at the same time, and also it makes you whistle the melody all day long, and yeah, and just this, you know, this anti-clerical spirit is really something that to me is somewhat of a root, something that in my family history had to be overcome. And I'm so thankful, for example, to my mother that she did that, so I didn't have to do it. And I got to be free of, like, the Catholic Church early on in my life, because it's so destructive. And, you know, in retrospect, we see what they did to women, to children, and so on. And yeah, I think it's just rightful to hate on the clerics.
Mm-hmm. And now I will ask you something that I not send you the question. It's, does then your mother have a consequences of the decision that reject this kind of behavior and this kind of traditional norms that destroy lives?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess there was probably,
what is the consequences?
Yeah, I mean, so that was maybe late 80s, early 90s. And so I guess some of the scandals of child abuse were already public. And so I think there was not so much resistance to distancing yourself to the Catholic Church and their traditions. But then also when you live in a little town like we did, of course, you know, the church gives a certain structure to the community, and distancing yourself from it gives you a certain reputation. Yeah. I don't think she suffered hard consequences, but I remember there being a lot of discussion, and also when I said that I wanted to be kind of de-baptized because I was baptized as a child, and there was a lot of discussion, but then my parents just gave in and said, okay, mm-hmm. Do what you think is right.
Because I ask you, watching the documentary about Sinead O'Connor and what she done in the moment when it's very brave, you know, I'm always thinking how patriarchate and this clerical, doesn't matter from which religion, you know, fundamentalism, bring you to your child is in threatened, but you believe somebody tell you that you need to believe. So
yeah.
you will not believe your child that it's happened. You know, for me, this kind of narrative, it's really against humanity and morality.
It's so destructive.
Yeah. Yes, totally destructive. But it's also like something that it's destructive, and you take a lot of role in this. It's destructive, this kind of misogyny, sexism, in also in art world. And what does the fight for you start when you in Vienna Film Academy bring the question about the gender quotes. What was the situation when you received the letters from filmmakers full of violence? How you feel, and how much is patriarchy and this canon and this masculinity outlined in art? Like, I know that now it's many questions. I want to ask you everything, and we are so serious like, right now because you open so much that I want to ask you. But what? How it's look like this moment when you start fight?
Yeah, well, I mean, coming from, you know, this studying gender studies, being like this young punk person, then finally making it into film school when I was 22, I really expected an environment that was going to be progressive and open and maybe even, you know, politically radical. And really what I experienced was this setting kind of like the 50s, you know. I never had authoritarian men in my life, but then when I went to film school, all of a sudden there was this system of these professors. They were all white, male, old, and they were godlike figures, you know. So especially with Michael Haneke, there was this huge admiration for him and his art, and he was on, I would say, the peak of his success when I started there. And there were a lot of, you know, people who didn't study there who would come to Film Academy and line up just to go and sit in his class for an hour or something. So, and also there was this very elitist spirit to it, because they accepted so few people, and then they would tell you, oh, you are now part of an elite, you know, everybody who makes it into this school is going to be something great. But really what you are is like a 22-year-old nobody who wants to make films, which is a really, you know, complicated art form, and you need a lot of time to practice and experience things and find your style and so on. And so it was a real culture shock for me. And when I look back and when I look at pictures of myself, first year I still had like an undercut and like funny clothes. And second year I really looked like a law student, you know, because I felt like, okay, this is so misogynistic and sexist, and how am I going to survive this? So I really tried to, you know, not give so many reasons to maybe pick me out and hate on me or criticize me. And yeah, it was really depressing. And also, I mean, the canon of what was important was 100% male. So we had this list of 50 or 100 most important films of all time, and there was not a single film by a female director. And when I addressed this, actually my professor said, well, name one good film made by a woman. And so I did name a couple of films, and he didn't even respond to it. And so I was really, I kind of lost my spirit during these years. And also when I look at the films that I made during film school, I really don't recognize much of myself in them. And at some point, I was sexually assaulted by another professor, and I tried to address it, and I really failed. So I didn't have enough support, and there weren't the structures that, you know, you need in a university to really address it and have consequences for a perpetrator. So I failed, and after, you know, some time later, I just quit because I just had lost the fight. And I was really down, and I thought I was not going to become a filmmaker. And my parents actually offered me to pay for law school, to go to law school to at least, you know, finish something. But I did have some friends from film school, and we decided to make this production company. And they really convinced me to at least for once try to make a film out of film school. And that's how I made Talia. And it was my first film. It was my first feature film. And it worked out. And yeah, I'm forever, you know, grateful for these few people who believed in me and were supportive and kind of on my side. And yeah, I mean, that was just, you know, the beginning of my professional life as a filmmaker. But also it made me, you know, I just felt like I can't work in these structures without trying to change them. And I was invited to be part of FC Gloria then. I think I was maybe 27 or 28. And I got to be close to a lot of established filmmaking women, and also worked for some of them to make money and like as an assistant. And that was really uplifting and encouraging and empowering. And yeah, when we founded FC Gloria, I remember we had this first open meeting, and we were totally surprised because it was open to all film workers. So not just directors or producers, everybody who works on film behind the camera. And all of a sudden, 100 people showed up. And we started this discussion, and maybe after half an hour, the first person said, well, you know, what we really need is a quota in funding, a gender quota in funding. And we were all so surprised because all we wanted was, you know, to do some networking and get together and maybe, you know, encourage each other. But then really there was this cry for a quota. And yeah, in the years following, we just started to do a lot of political lobbying really for the idea of a quota. And I think it took 7 years to really make it happen. And it then happened in 2021 during mm-hmm. the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we made it. I mean, woo!
And this that you actually like made it and that start to establish from 22 bring you then situation like reaction.
Yes, of course.
Because then starts something that you, but luckily you feel the power from Gloria crew. But when you start to actually lobbying, then it starts something that.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing was that when we started to talk about a gender quota in the film funding, so this is about public film funding, right? So dividing public money, because when we started to lobby for the quota, about 80% of the money was given to men.
And this is very powerful.
Yeah. And it was so interesting because when we started to talk about the quota, we were just ignored. So our colleagues, they acted as if they had never heard about it, you know? But then the moment we had our first successes, like politicians who met up with us and they were like, oh, wow, this really has to change. Or maybe even, you know, people in the funding institutions started to, you know, give us, host us and ask for our ideas. And all of a sudden, there was a lot of resistance to this. So it really took, it took them to see that powerful people were listening to us to get really angry. And I mean, a lot of things happened then, you know, people just being very hostile, your own colleagues, like not talking to you or, you know, involving you in like really, really aggressive discussions. And yeah, I mean, of course, I had a lot of very personal situations where I then heard that people, you know, tried to, they were on a jury and they tried so that I wouldn't get any money for my new film. And I had people threatening me in like anonymous mails and emails. But yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, fuck them, but it's need a lot of courage. And this is why I think that individually, but also collectively, we can change a lot. And still, I believe in the power of the people that can change.
Absolutely.
Just we need to figure out, you know, the steps. And like you say, maybe gender quote not in that moment sound for you like, well, but it's the right decision, because also it's connect with the economy of all of you who are film directors too.
Of course. And I mean, I think the good thing, that's one good thing about Austria, is that it's so small. And so if you want to speak to decision makers, even to people who, I don't know, are in the parliament, you actually find someone who knows someone, so you get to talk to them. So it's not like in, you know, bigger countries where it's really hard to get to speak to decision makers. And I think that was very much to our advance, because, you know, we then just decided not to be afraid to speak to people and to spread this idea and to explain the system that we work in and how, you know, this money is like the key to, I would say, Chancengleichheit. So like, you know, equal opportunity.
Exactly.
Because it's probably not the key to gender equality, because then you also have to talk about the content of art. And we did not talk about the content. We only talked about the economical part and said that this money has to be split. And when the quota was introduced in 21, it took 2 years to achieve 50-50. So that's what we have now.
Bravo, bravo, bravo. And we have now the movie that it's all like it's, you got the prize, but award. But I would like to start with the movie that I watch and I really enjoy. And of course, listen to the music that you send or the movie that I watch, your movie, I want to learn German. But in 23, you wrote, direct and produce Feminist What the Fuck, a documentary on feminism and gender equality, and won the audience award. I think this, that you, audience, it's the most popular film at the 2023 at the Diagonale Festival of Austrian Film, and the best director award at Vienna Women Prize. Congratulations, yeah! And become the third most watched Austrian film of 2023. And now my question, why is this film important? Why, and like your other films, it's very important, but what, why you start this movie? How it's come to idea and what it means to you?
Well, I started really working on the idea together with Ina Freudenschuss, who is a feminist, used to be a feminist journalist. She does not work as a journalist anymore, in 2015. So I was still working on my second fiction film, L'Animale, back then. And, you know, it was just, I felt like I would really love to see a topic documentary about intersectional feminism, because I was also tired of, you know, talks and talks and talks about feminist topics and people lacking any knowledge. So everybody has an opinion on feminist topics, but little knowledge. And also I thought of people like myself when I was a little bit younger, and, you know, even though we live in times of, you know, a lot of accessibility to knowledge, it's still really difficult to get in touch with feminist academic or feminist knowledge in general. And yeah, that was really what I wanted to kind of give back, you know, all of the people that wrote books, all of the great wise feminists that I got to learn from. I kind of wanted to, I don't know, pack this, all of this wisdom into a film and make it an entertaining film. So a lot of times I describe this film as a subversive content in candy wrapping, you know? So it's like supposed to look delicious and colorful and joyful, but the content is supposed to be subversive. And yeah, that's really what I wanted to make. And then years later, I got to shoot the film, because, especially because of the pandemic and because of other things I did, because I had to make money. So I made a lot of commercial films, TV films in the meantime, just to pay for my living expenses. And then in 2021 and 22, I really got to shoot Feminism, What the Fuck.
But I read from some interview that your idea is to, I don't know, like involve much more people who not speak German. And then because of pandemia, you
yes.
actually start to see your garden.
Yeah.
But I always believe that we need first really to see who surround us.
Yeah.
And you find amazing people, really, really diverse, so diverse people. Okay, I already say, like, I will like to know German to understand, not to read subtitles. So this is also good.
Absolutely. So I think when I was planning the film, so I wanted to make an English-speaking film, English
language
film.
But who
will
be the star that you will like to bring? Because I read that you want some stars to bring.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that in retrospect, I would say that I kind of stepped into a trap of patriarchy because when I wanted to make this film, I also felt like I have to prove that feminism is based on knowledge, right? And already you are taking up this patriarchal narrative of, if we are supposed to believe you, proof. You know, bring proof. And so that's why in the beginning I thought I'm supposed to have these, you know, US American stars or like people who are known to a broader audience. And so that, you know, just the term stars in this context is so wrong. But I felt like, because also making a film, you always have this pressure of, you know, funding a film. And when I started to apply for funding for this film, of course people said, oh, a film about feminism, who is going to watch this? You know, no one is going to be interested. This is, you're making a film for a feminist bubble and only your friends are going to come to the movies and watch this film. And so I always felt like I had to, you know, bring something to the table that would convince people to pay for this film. And then when the pandemic hit, we realized it's not going to work to, you know, get people from the US or from Australia or from UK to travel to Austria to shoot this film in an abandoned house with us. And I had to recast, so to say, the film. And it was such a gift because, of course, then, you know, I had a team that, you know, people who researched with me. And we realized there are so many genius people in the German-speaking countries. And, yeah, we just started inviting them to our project. And it was the best thing that happened to us.
And I think also this is give you opportunity to give visibility to the voices and who, you know, like, this is the new stars, but they are always stars in your movie. So time fly, and I would like to listen something from the list you bring us. What will be the next? Huh?
I think the next will be the Thalia song. It is called, I can't read, it's so far away. Ready to Go. It's by Tirana and it was composed for my film Thalia.
Ah, okay. Let's Ready to Go.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back. You listen to Energia on Radio Orange. My name is Zoe Gudović and I really enjoy with my great, 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 great guest, Katarina Mukstein. And Katarina, where people can inform about your work?
I would suggest the internet, a place called internet. I think you can find all of my films on streaming platforms, and also there are now DVDs for people like me who might have rediscovered DVD players, because that's what I did, you know, a couple of months ago. I realized, oh, I still have a DVD player. And I got it out and I started to watch DVDs again instead of streaming, you know, when you have to search for things all the time and you don't know what you want and you get offered so many things that you don't want. And why don't you just go to the bookstore and buy a DVD of one of my films? All of my films are in the standard edition, and just watch it on your old DVD player, with maybe with your old mom or your old grandma.
Or with your cats.
Yeah.
Okay. But what are now, when we will watch all the movies, what is the plan for the future?
It's hard. I'm working on another Tatort, which is Austrian crime TV, and I will shoot another Tatort next year. And also I'm hoping to write a new fiction film for cinema, and I'm working on the topic of collective self-defense. So that's what I'm mainly interested in at the moment. I feel like politically I'm over, you know, trying to change things in baby steps. I feel like a lot of things that we trusted in are collapsing, and we really need to confront the idea of what are we going to do. And as you said in the beginning, what is really, you know, the practice of solidarity with others when shit hits the fan? What are our bodies able to do? And how are we going to defend ourselves, and are we going to defend others? And that's going to be the topic of my new film, and it's also the main thing that I'm interested in politics-wise at the moment.
But you also start with the martial arts, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I just started boxing a couple of months ago, actually.
Watch out, cut, it's in the house.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a total beginner, and I think it's really hard, because it's like dancing, you know, you have to learn so many things and like strange movements. But also it feels so good. And it's an all-flinter group, so it's open for women and genderqueer people. And I just realized that I really love to be strong as a child. And I also love to get into fights and, you know, measure strength with others. And then, of course, in like female socialization, you're supposed to not to be too strong. And I'm kind of reconnecting to my inner child. So I'm like a strong bully, I guess.
Maybe we will watch in your new movie.
Like, absolutely.
Not only directing, but see. I already tell you I have a name, drag name for you.
Yeah, please. Tell it.
Katzi von Schatzi.
Nice, I love it.
But time fly, I would like to we finish with the L'Animal song, but before of this, how you rest?
How do I rest? Well, I mean, I love to go to other people's things. So I love to go to, I don't know, art performances and things that other people made. Because it relaxes me so much to be led by other people's ideas. I also love to just join friends when they already have plans. So everything that I don't have to direct, really. And I love road biking. So I cycle for hours and hours and hours. And
very active rest.
Yeah, and sometimes I used to have cats. I lost my candies. Cat last year, but as long as I had cats, also, you know, being on the couch with my cats on my tummy was the best way to rest. So, yeah, I'm still waiting for new cats to come to my house and live with me.
Okay. But really, like the last that I always like to ask my guest, what was the dream when you were little to become? Does it this to be boxer?
Actually, when I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a babysitter. Because, you know, both of my parents worked, so I always had people babysitting me and I always had the best time just hanging out with them, like, you know, hanging out with older people. And so I thought that's what I'm going to do. But then by the time I went to school and then, you know, we had these friendship books and you have to write, you know, my favorite color, what do I want to be when I grow up? My answer was, I want to be a boss.
Okay. This is really good answer for the end.
A babysitter and a boss.
And so the boss will say now goodbye for this Donnerstag. I really enjoy with you, Kat, and I looking forward for the next movie. And we will listen L'Animal. Why?
Because it's a song by Franco Battiato that I used in my film L'Animale, and I think it's just beautiful.
And thanks a lot for being part of Genergia.
Thank you so much.
Non è difficile, potendo poi rinascere, cambierei molte cose. Un po' di leggerezza e di stupidità. Fingere, tu riesci a fingere, quando ti trovi accanto a me, mi dai sempre ragione. E avrei voglia di dirti che è meglio se sto solo, ma l'animale che mi porto dentro non mi fa vivere felice mai. Si prende tutto, anche il caffè, mi rende schiavo delle mie passioni e non si arrende mai e non sa attendere. E l'animale che mi porto dentro vuole te. Dentro me segni di fuoco e l'acqua che li spegne, se vuoi farli bruciare, tu lasciali nell'aria oppure sulla terra. Ma l'animale che mi porto dentro non mi fa vivere felice mai. Si prende tutto, anche il caffè, mi rende schiavo delle mie passioni.
Genergia. Interviews.
Documenting her story.
Views from periphery.
Deconstructing the center.
Fight like a girl.
Orange 94.0. Das Freiradio in Wien.
Kafe LG želje, čestitke i pozdravi specijalno za vaše najmilije u zatvorima širom Austrije.
We would like to invite you to use the program Café LG to send greetings to friends and relatives in prison. Send us your voice messages for free on Viber on Sundays at 9 p.m. and we will broadcast them on the show. The Viber number is +43 664 662 1348. You can also call us live on Sunday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on +43 1 319 09 9933. You can find all information about the program on Café LG Facebook page.
LG želje čestitke i pozdravi.
Unter vielen, Community und Diaspora. Partizipation ist eindeutig ein Privileg in Österreich.
When you are not an Austrian citizen, you cannot vote, you cannot register a protest. What can you do? You are constantly afraid of saying anything publicly because you might be deported. When you are not addressed, what actually prevents you of being completely disobedient? Because what are you disobedient to? You know, I was approached the other day with some party giving these leaflets and flyers, and I was like, but I cannot vote. You are giving me a non-citizen flyer to vote for, like, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's always presented that people don't want to contribute to the society, but what if we understand this contribution is already happening? It's just not recognized.
Radio Positiv.
21 Uhr.
The Danny Chicago's Blues Garage.
22 Uhr.
Chili Box.
23 Uhr.
Koja's Urban Show. The best of hip-hop, R&B, dancer, and of course, some UK flavour.
Orange 94.0, das Freiradio in Wien.